Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffin and Wendy Snyder. It's the middle of the week. It's Wednesday. It should be a pretty good show. Jam-packed. And, Wendy, if I can point out one potential highlight, Jim Peterik is a performer who shuns the spotlight. He does not like to come out and talk about projects that he's working on. And somehow, Jasmine was able to snag Jim Peterik, and Jim will be on the show later on at 11:35. I'm very excited.
He has an upcoming show coming up. He's a Grammy Award winner.
Yes, he is.
Wallflower.
Yeah. He was not in the Wallflowers. No, that was Jacob Dylan.
I thought he was Bob Dylan's son-in-law.
No, Jacob Dylan.
Oh, you're thinking of Jacob. The wrong one.
That's all right. That's okay. All right. There's much to discuss with you. Many things have happened since we last
met
yesterday.
Right when we got off the stream.
Right.
Major news broke.
A bunch of stuff. Shall we start out with the story of Bill Cosby? Is that all right with you?
Yes.
Let's start out with some Bill Cosby talk. You said something that I've heard other people say in the last 24 hours, and I get it. Please explain.
I feel terrible saying this. I feel bad for him.
Because?
I guess because we were brainwashed all these years as he was the perfect TV father.
Right.
He was a great guy. I'm not taking away anything from the victim. I'm not saying this shouldn't have happened. But when I heard he was sentenced to jail... no bail. He had to go right there.
Right.
He will be transferred to a different facility.
Yeah.
But for a while, I was like, that is a shame.
See, I have the exact opposite end of that. As I was watching this yesterday, I said, I feel like I should feel sorry for him, especially after not only admiring him for decades, but meeting him,
yep.
Which was, at the time, I can't speak for you, but it was one of the highlights of my life,
yep.
Was to meet Bill Cosby and talk to Bill Cosby. But because of the pain and anguish and grief he brought to so many, you know, I can't feel sorry for him.
And that's why I am mad at myself for having these feelings.
Yeah. Well... think about what we knew while we were enjoying his work. We knew that he was a solid comedian, an actor, an entertainer. He
advocate
was called
for
America's
people's
dad.
Fathers.
Yes. Yes.
I mean,
furious that the African-American community was turning the way that it turned. He was constantly criticizing various people in the community, saying you're a bad role model for African-Americans. And you just go, wow, this guy really seems to care about everybody. Well, we were all wrong.
I guess I wish he was caught earlier, but the fact that he is, you know, blind pretty much, he's old, I don't know, I kept thinking about him spending the night in jail. I'm not saying it's not deserved, and again, I feel really bad that I feel bad for him.
It's one of those things that's so confusing, and I think I mentioned this to you at one other time. If you look at stories in our lifetime that are just flat out unlikely, that's one of them.
Yep.
That Bill the beloved Bill Cosby could be in this situation. It doesn't make sense.
It just totally. And I honestly feel terrible about myself for feeling
bad for him.
Yes.
Well, you're feeling bad because the version of Bill Cosby that was in your head is going to jail. But the reality is that's not the version that's going to jail. It's the guy that.
Deserves to go to jail.
Definitely deserves to go to jail.
I mean, there were 60 women, right?
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. 60 women who, anytime they tell their stories, are so emotional and broken up about it. And there was a special, a year ago, where they talked to so many of the women, and the stories were very, very similar. He promised that he could advance their careers. He drugged them. He did terrible sexual things to them without any consent whatsoever. He got what he deserved. Actually, he didn't get what he deserved. He should have been in jail a lot longer.
That's what I mean. And I wouldn't have felt bad if he had been apprehended sooner and perhaps some of these 60 women wouldn't have been abused.
Right. A texter from 847 says, Wendy, you're compassionate. Don't apologize. There's something to that. No, nobody wants to see any. I mean, think about it. How many people have suffered because of this? Because Bill Cosby did something. So now another person is suffering. Bill Cosby is suffering. And you see that. You go, wow, an old man is going to jail. An old man that I've loved for years is going to jail. But this is no fluke. You know?
It isn't.
It's no fluke at all.
Weren't you surprised that he was sentenced to jail?
Shocked. I didn't think we'd see that happen. Or if he was sentenced, I thought there'd be a series of appeals that would go on for years.
He is going to appeal, but he cannot be out while the appeals are going.
Right.
Because yesterday, Bertrand reported that, you know, they were trying to deliberate and they would announce something at 1:30.
Right.
And I just really didn't think he was going to get sentenced. And 3 to 10 years is the thing. When will we
minimum.
Know?
Right. Oh, I don't know. I don't know when that's determined. I'm not sure. The other interesting thing at the very end was the spokesperson for Bill Cosby, who referred to the case as the most racist, sexist case in American history, did he say? Or words to that effect? I don't understand why he considered this case to be racist and sexist. I can't figure that out. They were very strong words at the very end. He was very adamant to, he wanted that point put across that this case was extremely racist and sexist.
Where do you connect the dots on that one?
I don't know.
And another text, why feel bad for Cosby? He drugged and raped women and got away with it for most of his life. I know that. That's why I feel bad that I feel bad for him.
If he did it to one woman,
it's
horrendous and terrible.
Bad for the victim.
But he did. 60-something women have come across saying that he did this. And who knows if there was more who just didn't want to be
come
dragged
forward.
Through. Yeah. So, no, you have nothing to feel guilty about and feeling bad. But at the same time, you got to weigh, like, as I'm watching this yesterday, I'm like, wow, that Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby.
I know. I can't even
it
believe
it. Doesn't make
it.
Sense.
Well,
right?
You know, it would be the story of the year, just
right.
about any other year.
Right.
I was thinking of that coming in. That I mean, really, this is a fall of a great American icon, and it's not in some ways getting its due just because it's being pushed out by so many other things.
Yeah.
But I mean, take the Cosby Show even out of it, and it's huge. This pioneer actor, this guy who spoke as a moral force in the 80s and 90s. I mean, it's just an amazing story.
Wasn't he the first black American to be a regular on a television show with I Spy with Robert Culp?
That sounds familiar to me.
I think so.
I can't remember that happening prior to him being on I Spy. I don't remember that happening. But he was constantly groundbreaking. He is... Any stand-up comic, if they're listing the best comics of all time, Bill Cosby's name is going to be in the top 3 or 4 or 5. There's
That's
nobody.
Why it's got to be harder for you, being in the stand-up business. I mean, I'm sure he was inspirational in
Always.
Your development.
Well, not just inspirational, but if you look at the other giants of stand-up comedy, like George Carlin or Richard Pryor or Lenny Bruce, those guys worked with sort of an edge to them that kids couldn't enjoy their material. Bill Cosby always worked clean. You know, it was stuff that kids would enjoy, old people would enjoy, everybody would enjoy. He was so universal. He took things, you know, keep in mind, he came up in the 60s when just the mere fact that a black man was on stage was shocking to some. You know, in white clubs, a black comedian, that was so shocking at the time. But he made you forget that. He just went on and he was just amazing.
In 1965, Bill Cosby was cast alongside Robert Culp in the I Spy espionage adventure. That was a great show on NBC. I Spy became the first weekly dramatic television series to feature an African-American in a starring role.
Isn't that amazing?
Right.
And that's only the mid-60s. It's not that long ago. But until then, it just didn't happen. So, yeah, so groundbreaking, so vital to comedy, to performing, to the world of sitcoms. Steve mentioned this earlier. There was a time on TV, it's hard to believe, that people were giving up on sitcoms. They go, nobody buys this anymore. Set up punchline. It's not working anymore. Bill Cosby came and changed all that. So, did a lot of good things in his life, no doubt about it, but...
I know, and when we met him, and I've brought this up before, it was a strange occurrence because we were backstage, you and your wife met him, mm-hmm. and then it was my anniversary, like my 18th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Jim had to work late, so I brought Dylan with me, who loved Fat Albert, and so when I said, oh, this is my son Dylan, Bill Cosby said, where's Dylan's dad? And right away I got defensive. I'm like, oh, his dad had to work. His dad is also my husband. Yeah. We're married. In fact, tonight's our anniversary. And then he said, well, Dylan, maybe you can play some video games so mom and dad can celebrate later.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at him.
Yep.
And then on the way home, Dylan said, did Bill Cosby tell me to go away so you guys could have sex? I'm like, I don't know.
A version of that. Yeah.
But Jim and I were talking about this morning, and you know, honestly, it's Bill Cosby. So had he offered me a drink and said, "Wait, I got the Bill Cosby special. I'm going to pour in there," I wouldn't have thought anything different. We all trusted him.
So, without a doubt.
That's what hurts. Yeah. Is these poor women trusted him?
So is there an element also of, if Bill Cosby could fool us, who can't fool us?
Anyone can fool us, right?
That plays into it a little bit.
Mulder, trust
it
no one.
It shouldn't be that way. All right, we'll take a quick break. If you want to jump in, you can. We're at 312-981-7200. Very, very easy to reach. Several texts have come in, Wendy. All good. This one says, for people of our age, Bill Cosby was funny for our entire life. And yes, I'm talking about Fat Albert. I mean, come on, Fat Albert alone on a Saturday morning, nothing was better. It is a sad day. It's too bad. Another text said to you that what we're probably feeling bad for is because an icon has been shattered, that we've loved his characters for so many years, and we feel bad because they're all tainted in some way. And in a way they are. I think I told you this. I was listening to one of the comedy channels on satellite radio, and a Bill Cosby bit came on, and I knew the bit, and I've laughed at it in the past, a thing about he and his brother Russell, and it just wasn't funny anymore. It was very hard for me to enjoy it.
And it's not even the icon being taken down. It's the fact that he's an old man. I don't know what it is.
A combination.
It's pathetic.
It is pathetic.
It is. That is it.
Yeah.
And again, when I say that, and don't send angry texts because I'm not going against the victims here, and I feel worse for them, obviously.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But I'm mad at myself for going, poor Bill Cosby. But not poor Bill Cosby. But my first thought is that.
Right. Did you see any of the interviews with the other victims afterwards? They, you know, even though this case wasn't their case, it was for somebody else. It was representative, and it was like, it was a sigh of relief from all of them, just saying, finally we get some peace of mind knowing he'll spend some time behind bars for the things he did over the years.
And I wondered, too, about the main victim who was on trial or accusing him, and I wondered if she had any guilt, too, that he's been put away.
I would just be guessing, but I don't know how you could feel guilty.
I know. I'm sure she's relieved he gets what he deserved because he did. And again, I wish this would have happened sooner.
Right.
It's unbelievable to me that he got away with this for so long.
Yeah, I know. Switching gears for just a second. Did you happen to see the footage of the giant fight that took place in the bleachers at Wrigley Field
last night? Yes, I did.
Your thoughts?
Cubs fans.
As a White Sox fan. I had a feeling.
Cubs
fans.
There'd
be some version of that. Yeah.
Can't live with them, can't fight them.
Things got a little crazy in the bleachers after
the
game.
What started that? I don't know the whole story, but I saw the footage.
I can't tell by the footage. I've watched the footage myself, but there's one particular part of the footage that I wanted to play for you because in almost anything that happens, a lesson can be learned. And yesterday, I've been a baseball fan since I was 2 years old. The first 2 years, I didn't really like baseball, Wendy, but then something happened when I was two, and I suddenly loved the game. I learned a very valuable lesson about baseball and the culture of baseball yesterday from one of the guys who was not involved in the fight, but he was very close to the fight. He wasn't trying to break the fight up. It's really strange. If you've seen the footage, some people go out of their way to try to break the fight up. Other people just either watch it or pull their cameras out to videotape it. Cubs security, not necessarily
slow
nearby.
To respond.
Very slow to respond.
But weren't there more? I mean, it was a group of people. That's why I wouldn't. Yeah. Why would you get involved in the melee?
Yeah, probably best to distance yourself. But here's the lesson I learned from one of the people in the bleachers who said this, as you'll hear several times. Let's take note.
There's no fighting in the bleachers. There's no fighting in the bleachers.
He said that about 11 times in a row. He just kept walking around yelling. And I know that it's a takeoff on there's no crying in baseball. I'm sure he was inspired by that immortal line, there's no crying in baseball. But he would explain to anyone who would listen and several people who were not listening, there is no fighting in the bleachers. If you're going to fight, you go to the upper deck or you take it out of Wrigley Field.
Or the seats.
You can fight in the seats.
But not in the bleachers.
Lower deck is allowed. No, there's several places in and around Wrigley where fighting is fine.
The bathroom, cool.
You can fight in the bathroom all day long. You can fight on the field. If you don't like the other guy, the guys on the other team, take a whack at them. But in the bleachers, this will not be tolerated.
I was expecting that more from Sox fans, I'll be honest with you. And I am a Sox fan.
Well, you know, this is just one of those things where it just shows how much we've changed. Because there used to be fights at every game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, especially at...
Baseball?
I know, hockey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
At Old Comiskey Park. Are you kidding me? They all the time.
Can I tell you something?
And at Wrigley, too, but I remember them more at Sox games. But, I mean, just routine. You would stand up and look
down. Somebody would pop you.
And you'd see security guards all running in one area. You knew there was a fight going on there. I mean, just always.
I know this sounds like I'm bragging, but I was very fortunate as a kid. My dad worked for a company that had season tickets to the Cubs and the White Sox. Our season tickets at the White Sox, there were two guys that sat to our left who bet on everything that happened during the game. They would bet on whether the next pitch was a ball or strike. They'd bet on the final score. They'd bet on when a pinch hitter would come in. You name it, they would bet on it. Both of them, before the game would start, would bet on which inning would be the first fight in the crowd.
Really?
Yeah. Third inning, fourth inning, they'd write it down. They'd pass money after the fight took place. But it was so... Steve's right. It was standard. Somebody was going to hit somebody at a baseball game.
So I don't know. What do you think has changed? It's that they've stopped selling as much beer?
I think there's more security now.
Yeah, I mean, the guys in the yellow jackets used to run around like a swarm of bees after
the
fights.
And mostly, I shouldn't say all, ex-cops, right? Cops out with on their day off, right. Maybe.
But, I mean, it just was routine.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen a fight in it, other than the one I watched last night in the bleachers, believe it or not. I haven't seen a fight at a baseball game in a couple of years, Steve. So, yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, it just doesn't happen anymore.
We've become more civilized, like to think.
I don't think that's the case.
I think we became more civilized for a while. Now it's all going
it's fading
backwards.
Away.
Backsliding, baby.
Yeah, it's fading away. So, once again, the lesson that we learned yesterday is...
There's no fighting in the bleachers!
There's no fighting in the bleachers!
There's no fighting in the bleachers!
Good to know.
Actually, I would think that's where most of the fighting would be.
I agree. Cheaper seats,
yeah,
more fights.
A little more beer.
Can I confess something?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you or Steve are with me, but I loved the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
The 1980s were my era.
Mm-hmm. But Day-Glo shirts...
I had half my head shaved,
yeah,
and then really big on the other side.
Yes.
I wore leggings with black ankle boots, always a little bit of my ankle showing, with like a black mini skirt and jackets that I would get at Goodwill or Salvation Army.
I'd run into you at the Punkin' Donuts, right, at Clark and Belmont?
Yep.
I loved the 80s so much. There's a new book out called Trailer Trash, an 80s memoir, and the author is on the line with us right now, Angie Cavallari. Hey, Angie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Wendy?
I lived for the 80s. I just want to talk about this one chapter in your book. On the corner of our Formica kitchen counter next to our touch-tone beige phone.
Oh, those never go out of style.
I know, but don't you remember that?
Yeah, sure.
What was so special about the 80s?
Well, you know, I heard you waxing nostalgic over there about what you were wearing, but I think it was a freedom that we no longer have today, right? Like, you know, if you needed to disconnect, you just took your phone off the hook. You can't really do that anymore with technology. I mean, you got GPS tracking you now.
Yeah, that's true. A lot has changed. Now, this is an 80s memoir, Trailer Trash. You didn't grow up in a trailer home, but very near to one, didn't you?
I did, yeah. So my parents actually bought a trailer park, but I mean
a park? A whole park?
A whole trailer park, and we lived in it in a house, but the house was, I mean, these people were like 200 yards from me. I mean, it's not like, so yeah, so it was a surreal upbringing. It was a little bit different, and there was no kids in the trailer park, like none. No kids lived there. They weren't allowed. So
a very selective
very
trailer
weird.
Park.
It was very, yeah, discriminating, right?
Very much.
But it wasn't a retirement community either. It wasn't like the trailer parks where, you know, people settle down, they come down from Chicago, and it wasn't anything like that. It was very, very different. So it made for an unusual upbringing, which it was twofold. That was my drive to write it. I thought, well, this was a really weird childhood I had. I never really realized that. And then on top of that, I really missed the 80s, just like you, Wendy. I rock the outfits. I don't think I would do... I did. I loved it. I miss it so much. And some of it I'll still wear, and some of it, not so much. I'll leave that alone.
Do you still wear the lace fingerless Madonna gloves? Because I went through a phase of that as well.
Oh, man, I did. And actually, I have an 80s party scheduled tomorrow night, so I had to go out and track that stuff down again. But I wore jelly bracelets probably up to mid-arm. I'm not kidding, almost to my elbow. I don't know how many I own. Hundreds, thousands, who knows?
I had those, too.
What do you think it is, Angie, when I see pictures of myself or people around me in the 70s, it's embarrassing. We go, how do we not know better than to dress like that and look like that? But in the 80s, it doesn't seem to be that way. What happened just one decade later?
Well, you know, I think that people want to return to that simpler time. And it's odd that the fashions are coming back and we're seeing a lot of millennials wearing them. Like, I see mom jeans everywhere, and they're rocking them too. I'm not wearing those again, but they really are rocking them. I just think that we're trying to tap into a simpler time, and I do think some of the styles from the 80s, some were kind of cool. I mean, I still do. I have a members only jacket, and I'm going to wear it.
So does Bill.
I'm wearing it now.
You're wearing it now.
No.
Bill, did you wear muscle shirts? Did you do the muscle shirt thing?
No, not really.
Parachute pants? Have those?
Well, the big Gerbeau type pants. Yeah.
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 I thought it was pretty fun. And Steve Bertrand, our news guy, went to an 80s night over at Ravinia, and all the bands that were there, I can't even remember who was there, Wang Chung.
Yeah.
So,
nice. You know, it's funny, Bill mentions the 70s, and that was a bad look, but that has totally come back with the paisley and the bell bottoms. But I don't think as much of the 80s has come back. Do you, Angie?
It's weird. It's kind of blending in. I was at the mall, and I walked into a Forever 21, and it was like in one section it looked like the 80s had exploded, and then in the center it was like Mary Tyler Moore was kicking.
Oh.
Like, I'm not kidding. I mean, complete with the beret. Like, it's ready to be thrown in the air. There's these plaid bell-bottom sort of really belled-out pants, which can look flattering if you're short. They look good. You know, they can work. And then there was a whole section that was pretty much all 80s. Bright colors and neon going on. So I almost think there's a little bit of the 70s kind of trailing on the end of that. And as a 70s baby and an 80s child, I get that because I do remember the 70s. I remember in one of the chapters, I had this horrible turquoise brown turtleneck sweater. It was awful, and it was a dress too. I was like, good Lord, I would never wear that again. Horrible.
All right, so growing up, as your parents have this trailer park, you had a little different upbringing because you went to a private school and could escape that a little bit.
I did escape it, but I just, two of the worlds, they were just so different. I mean, these kids had trapper keepers and like really cool lunches, and you know, I mean, I could never really reconcile that, and I never have. I mean, it was just, they lived in suburbia and they rode their bikes down the street. Like, I couldn't really do that. It was kind of dangerous. And the people, the danger was like right around me. So you had to stay, you had to stay reined in a little bit more. So I didn't get the full 80s, like coming home when the street light came on. I didn't really get to do that too much.
Do you think we have such fond memories of the 80s because that was when we were blossoming into, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, I graduated from high school in 81. So those 80s, I was just blossoming into an adult. So that's why I have such fond memories. Why would anybody else like it?
Well, I think, I mean, definitely the fashion, but I think there's, like I said, I keep saying it, I keep going back to the technology, the lack of it, just more freedom to it. There was a lot more generations that were included as well. I mean, if you guys remember sock hops, like that was a staple costume, would be a poodle skirt, which was how many years apart from where we grew up? I just don't think we have that integration anymore. I don't think we understand that there wasn't instant gratification back then. Like, you had to go to a record store and try to sing the song that you heard for about 30 seconds on the radio, and they always made fun of me. I'd be like, the song went like this, like, get up, da da da, and they're like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then you would go over and try to find it. You really had to work for the stuff that you wanted. Now, you know, you can go on Spotify or Pandora and just listen to it. Oh, yeah, that's the song. It's right there. There's a clip from it. So, I mean, there wasn't the instant gratification. There just wasn't.
Well, your other option, though, was to listen to the radio and have your fingers ready on the record button on your recorder and then tape it right off the radio. That's the other option, right?
Yeah, that was like early pirated music.
Yeah.
And I had several tapes like that. You would wait all day to hear the song, too. Uh-huh. They would tease it, and you'd be like, oh, my God, it's going to come on. And I would have like my little Sony there. I'd like my play and record. I'm like, I'm doing this. And you would hit it. I mean, it took precise timing. It was a lot of work, but I made it happen.
Yep.
I loved 80s music, and I love all that retro stuff, but, you know, I have to tell you that in 1980, the Rupert Holmes classic Escape, the Pina Colada song, went to number one.
Changed the world.
It didn't change the world. Also, Casey and the Sunshine Band, very popular. Captain and Tennille, Do That to Me One More Time. It was like you went on the alternative rock and roll, or you went to the Wuss tunes.
Yeah, nothing in the middle.
Right. There wasn't anything in the middle. It's like that. And that was classified as yacht rock because there was these commercials. But do you guys remember those? You could buy the album.
Yeah.
And it would scroll through and, you know, there would be some Cat Stevens on there. And then you would kind of see it would be like some, you know, Christopher Cross, some of the lighter rock, which was cool for your grandparents to listen to as well. Like you could tune in because my parents were not wild about the fact that I played Like a Virgin by Madonna, which is mentioned in Trailer Trash and Eddie's memoir as well. I do reference Madonna. My parents were not thrilled that I knew every word to that song, not what you want your kids singing. So you're right. There was like this huge divide. There was no in between. I mean, it could get full on raunchy to Beat It, which all the adults knew what that meant, to, you know, Christopher Cross, if you find yourself in New York City, right? So it was weird. It was weird. But I listened to both. I really am not a fan of the Pina Colada song. I'm with you, Wendy.
But I'm sure you know every word to it, because I do.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, why, right? And I'm not a Rod Stewart fan. I'm going to come out and say it. Maggie May starts playing. I'm like, change it.
That's because we've only heard it like 7 million times.
Right? Oh, and it sticks in your head forever. What was your favorite 80s song, guys? What was the one that brings you back that you would listen to 100 times still?
I loved Don't You Forget About Me, Simple Minds.
Oh, yeah.
Breakfast Club was my movie. I loved that movie. Do you have a favorite from the 80s?
Well, Hall & Oates can do no wrong. You know that.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I just saw them in concert last summer.
Yeah.
And I've heard that they don't get along in real life.
Oh.
But I will tell you, they sounded exactly the same. And every hit they played, like they didn't try to go crazy. They weren't promoting a new album. Like you heard every single hit that you wanted to. And they were incredible in person. I'd be curious to know how good Wang Chung was.
Oh. That's a good question.
Bertrand, didn't you see Wang Chung?
I saw him a couple weeks ago.
Were they good?
They sounded great.
They sounded great.
It was a short set, but they really sounded fun.
And what other bands were on that list?
Flock of Seagulls.
Oh.
Nice.
And they sounded good, too. And you knew some of them more. I
can't remember.
Was Naked Eyes one of them,
Steve? Naked Eyes was one of them, right. But it was just one eye.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. It was like Blink.
No.
Naked Blink.
Well, you know, we do kind of love the 80s because Netflix with Stranger Things is the 80s. The Goldbergs represents the 80s.
Yep.
So it is a flashback and a good time for me. Trailer Trash and 80s Memoir, Angie Cavallari. You can get this book wherever your favorite books are sold. Amazon, you have a website as well, Trailer Trash Memoir. Did we learn the metric system in the 80s?
Because, no, it's a little earlier.
Because they said, oh, my God, the whole world is going, you know, with the metric system. You need to learn it. It didn't happen.
Yeah. It didn't happen. I kind of wish it did because you could see me in the store and here I am relying on technology. When I do have to refer to it, I'm like, okay, how many ounces is a liter again? I wish they were. I do remember them trying to push that in school and it kind of coming up. And then we were like, no, we're just going to stick with ounces. We don't want to deal with liters. So, yeah, I mean, I do remember that vaguely. And I don't remember. I don't remember the metric system. So
yeah, I don't really
leave
either.
It at that.
And Cyndi Lauper was probably my all-time favorite 80s woman. I loved her.
Yeah.
So if you have one side, Wendy, you said you had one side of your head shaved.
I did.
Were probably like serious punk rock. So I almost feel like the Stranger Things really resonate with you. They did a lot of Should I Stay or Should I Go is the song that
the
was
Clash,
prominent.
Yeah.
In there.
I loved it. I was a poser, though, Angie. I had the look because I liked it, but I really was not a punk kid at all. Just a poser.
Oh, I'm sure. I think big those people were. Come on. I mean, really, how many? I mean, yeah, you know, Rage Against the Machine. I don't know. The Man and all that. I'm not sure everybody went full board on that and adopted that, but I didn't do that. I was more of the pop side of it, like Madonna. I loved all of her albums. And again, she was a little risque, a little crazy out there. And some of the albums I had to hide, like George Michael did a song called I Want Your Sex.
Yeah.
Not a song you're like, yeah, I know every word to it. So it was kind of a weird time as well. So
Angie, the Madonna you liked before she was British or after she was British?
Before
she was British.
Sure.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah. Before. Yeah. The Immaculate Collection was kind of, and then she started, you know, you're like, what? Is she starting to get an English accent? What's going on
That's
here?
That's what happens.
I miss that Madonna. I do. Because she still had, Papa Don't Preach. There wasn't Danny Aiello in that video.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I love that look.
I dressed like him. Sure. I kept dressing like Danny Aiello.
What do you mean, the wife beater tank top?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I can appreciate that.
Classic
nice.
Look.
All right.
Well, Trailer Trash and 80s Memoir, it's a nice read and a nice flashback to the 80s. Good luck with the book. You can go to trailertrashmemoir.com. You're also on Twitter and Facebook. Just look her up, Angie Cavallari. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Angie. A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Oh, the Eurythmics.
Yeah.
I loved the 80s.
By the way, just Eurythmics. It's one of those bands that refuses to use the word the. They're just Eurythmics.
Like Talking Heads.
Yeah.
It's not the Talking Heads.
Yeah. They're adamant, though. That
Adamant was also very popular
Adamant
in the 80s.
Was. But the kids in Eurythmics don't want you throwing the word the out.
Annie Lennox and what was that guy's
name?
David Stewart.
Stewart, that's right.
Yep.
There was a pitcher for the Oakland A's named
Dave Stewart.
There was a reporter from WGN Radio.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I know Dave Stewart.
Just retired from another station.
It's very trendy to have the name Dave Stewart in the
80s. Surrounded by David Stewarts in the 80s.
Sometimes the pitcher for the A's, Dave Stewart, would fill in for Dave Stewart in Eurythmics, and the crowd was befuddled by it.
Right.
They didn't understand it at all.
And what's really weird is our David Stewart one time pitched for the Oakland A's when they were in town and they were down on pitchers.
Ask a question?
Yeah.
Why does everything go back to baseball for you two?
Well,
everything.
America's pastime,
what
Wendy.
It is. That's
it's America's
baseball.
Pastime.
Yeah.
And someone has texted, 80s was the era of Chicago filmed movies with John Cusack. I think he was in a lot of them, but John Hughes was.
Yeah.
All those movies were in the 80s, right? Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink.
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller.
Uh-huh.
What was the Christian Slater one where he had open heart surgery, heart transplant? I don't think that was John Hughes, but they filmed it at the.
Steve Cochran's in that movie.
Is he?
Yeah.
They filmed it at the Rib, the Twin Anchors, I think.
Right. That sounds right.
Ribs and Hearts.
Ribs and Hearts was the name of that movie?
Yeah. No, it's Hearts and Ribs, actually, but you were so close.
I don't remember that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Minnie Driver and Christian Slater,
I
think.
It's very good. I don't remember the name of it. Is it called?
Telltale Heart.
Telltale Heart. Yeah, that's it.
I have never in my Untamed Heart.
Untamed Heart.
There you go.
Did I see that? Was it good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Marissa Tomei.
Do you like movies with
Christian
Slater about guys who have heart ailments?
Right, and ribs.
If you like that, that's a great movie to see.
You can't go wrong with the ribs at Twin Anchors.
Yep.
What was the one shot at Mother's? Demi Moore. Yeah.
And you know who wrote that, right?
Who?
Tim Kazurinsky.
He did. Yeah. That's right.
Ian Denise DeClue.
Based on the Mamet play, right?
Yeah, Sexual Perversity in Chicago.
And it was. They also set it at Kelly's, which was a great bar on Belden, was it? Or Webster, under the L at Sheffield.
Right.
Used to go in there all the time.
Yeah.
God, I loved that movie. I wanted the relationship that Rob Lowe and Demi Moore had.
Oh, yeah. One of Jim Belushi's finest films. If somebody stopped me and said, quick, what are the 20 best Jim Belushi movies, I would definitely mention About Last Night.
1 through 19, pretty much.
Yes.
That was a great movie.
It was.
It was a fun movie.
And the strange thing is, like, it made a lot of money, and they were all ready to do a sequel, and they couldn't get, like, there were times where everybody was on board except Rob Lowe. He's like, I can't do it. I got something going on. And then everybody but Demi Moore, and then everybody but, believe it or not, James Belushi. I called him James. Tip of the respect cap to you, Jim. And then Elizabeth Perkins, was she the fourth?
Yeah,
she was.
Yeah, so then she was too busy.
We'll have to go watch that again.
Maybe they'll do it now.
Because I was living that life, that age.
Yeah,
in
Chicago.
Neighborhood.
Right.
Really? You lived on your own? How old were you when you moved out?
What do you mean?
I'm just asking, how old were you when you moved out of your house?
I
can't remember when the movie came out, but...
It was mid-80s, so I graduated from college in 85.
Yeah.
So I would have been living...
You were swinging bachelor pad in the city?
Yeah.
Steve shared a place with Jim Belushi.
I did.
And Dave Stewart.
And Dave Stewart.
Swinging bachelor
all
pad.
The Dave Stewarts.
Where I would go to the video
all
store.
All three Dave Stewarts.
All weekend long, watch John Hughes movies.
Yeah. That's
when things were good.
Well, I would have to go out and live it when I could watch it.
How old were you when you moved out?
20.
I didn't live at home after my freshman or sophomore year in college. I never moved back home.
I was 23 when I moved out.
Oh.
I was old.
Yeah. How come?
It just took me a while to get a job and a car and things like that. I just was curious.
Yeah.
Because now it's like, when you're 18, you can move out. Jimmy Mack moved out of his house when he was 18.
Did he at 18?
I think people used to move out quicker.
No, they don't move out anymore.
I'm okay with that, Mary.
Well,
really
they can't afford it. They have student loans.
It's too hard to.
They all have student loans, so nobody can get out of the house.
Yep.
All right. Well, there's your 80s segment. I miss
it.
It was so much easier then.
I got a tear in my eye.
Oh. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, all on WGN Radio. All right, I'm still thinking about the 80s, and Bertrand mentioned a movie that was filmed, where did you say, Twin Anchors?
Twin Anchors, Twisted Heart.
Everyone keeps saying it's Return to Me with David Duchovny and Minnie Driver. Right, there was no Christian Slater.
No, wait, but there was another one. That's a good one, because Return to Me was...
David Duchovny, Carol O'Connor, Minnie Driver.
He was the bartender at Twin Anchors.
And a sometime WGN employee, did you know that? An on-air personality?
Who?
Harry Tynowitz is in that movie.
Really?
Yes.
Stop.
So the idea
was... Harry demanded a nude scene, and they wouldn't give it to him?
That was his last time he was in a movie, wasn't it?
Yes, the problem was he was demanding a nude scene for Carol O'Connor,
right.
And he didn't want to do it.
Right.
So...
All right, Dr. John Duffy is here.
Yeah. So the premise was the boyfriend died, and then his heart was donated, and I think it went into, was it David Duchovny? And then he fell back in love with the original girlfriend.
Oh, right.
But
right.
Where does Christian Slater?
Well, there was Untamed Heart, too.
Right, that was a different movie filmed in Minneapolis.
Twin Cities, Chicago, Minneapolis.
Twin Anchors, Twin Cities, what's the difference?
All, the
all right, now we can introduce clinical psychologist, do we call him our show psychologist?
I think that's official, yeah.
Dr. John Duffy is with us. Hi, Dr. Duffy.
Hi, guys, how are you?
We're good. You have a podcast, Better, with your wife as co-host, Julie Duffy. You can She is awesome. So are you. You can find it on WGN Plus or wherever your favorite podcasts are found. This is school is back in session,
right?
For maybe a month or so, right? About a month. School
about
started.
A month there, yeah, something like that.
And sometimes it's a huge adjustment for people going away to school.
Yes. So one thing I've run into, let's say the last 5 to 7 years or so, are college freshmen, between 12 and 20 or so, who are back in my office within the next month, let's say, by Thanksgiving for sure, who somehow dysregulated in some way or another in their freshman year. Either they drank too much, they stopped going to class, they pledged a fraternity or sorority and got over-involved in that. But something went wrong enough that either the school or their parents or themselves pulled the plug. They're back at home, and they're kind of stunned because this is their first big failure in their eyes in life, and trying to figure out what went wrong there. How do I regroup?
Yeah,
that happened to me. I went to Illinois State right out of high school, you know, after graduating, and made it. I knew right away I wasn't loving it. And my mom said, try and hang in there for the semester. And I did. And I was home before Christmas. And you do feel like a failure.
Yeah. Yeah. Most kids.
I thought I was ready.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is, I think we kind of overhype, especially now, what that's supposed to be like. This is going to be the best time of your life. You're going to love every minute of it, you know, and without ever giving kids permission to realize, you know what, you might be lonely sometimes. This might be really hard. It might be alarming to see how much people drink or how people behave. You may never have been exposed to some of this stuff before. And so kids sometimes come back in shock a little bit and not really having had exposure to a lot of what they're exposed to, they don't know how to regulate that. So they have to figure it out. And therapy is often one starting point for them.
Yeah.
What is a parent's role in that? Because as a parent, you want to say, just stick it out. Just, you can always, you know, finish the semester, finish the year. If you don't like it, you don't have to go back. But then you hear the sobs of your kid. When do you decide as a parent that it's okay to come home?
It's one of the trickiest things for parents, right? Because that's what you want to do. You want them to show themselves, hey, you can handle this. You're competent. You're resilient. You're smart. You also want to, you know, balance that out with, is it reasonable? Can you really make it through this? Or is this causing damage that's going to be really, really hard to undo?
Right.
What we fail to kind of take into consideration in situations like this are all the resources that are available on a campus. So we don't usually bring in counselors, advisors, therapists that are available on most every campus in America to help us make these calls and make these decisions. So what I usually encourage parents to do is bring a lot more people into the discussion than just you and your child, because you don't have all the information. They're going to withhold some things from you, and they might not know exactly what it is they're going through.
The school doesn't want this to explode. The school doesn't want a student to say, wow, I'm so disenchanted. I thought it'd be one thing, it's another. I give up. They want the relationship to continue.
Absolutely. What schools want is to provide resources to keep kids there, right?
Yeah.
And to thrive there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, so, oh, you're having a hard time? Okay, well, let's drop a class and let's get you into one of our counselors and let's figure out what a good game plan is for you getting through this semester. Even if it's not the way you pictured, you can make it through somehow.
Yeah.
And although the kid has to ask for help, and I think that might be the hardest part.
It is. It is. And there is some taboo about walking into those buildings. Those counseling centers tend to be freestanding buildings. Do I want to be the kid walking in there? Do I look like I've got some kind of major, you know, mental health problem or something like that? But
I bet it's easier for a kid who is all of a sudden in a college where they don't know everybody as opposed to being in high school where you kind of know almost everybody.
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely easier than walking into the social work office of a high school.
Sure.
Good point, Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I do know some parents that last year their kids went off to school and they were miserable and they were going back and forth. Oh, do I let them come home? Do I not? They decided to stick it out and now it's like they love it.
Yeah.
So you never know what's going to happen.
No, you don't. And you want to give your kid an opportunity to make it work, right? But if you feel like your kid's in a lot of distress, you want to give them that out clause. Like, you know, hey, let's try this for another week. And I usually encourage parents, take it week by week. Keep in a lot of touch with your child. And, you know, if it feels like, okay, you're turning a corner. This was just an initial shock, an initial difficulty, but you're adapting really well. Then stick it out if you can. Because to the point I think both of you are making, you want this to work, right?
Oh,
once your kid's away at school, you want it to work. It's really hard to undo once they're back home and regrouping.
Right.
Yeah.
And the parent certainly doesn't want to establish a pattern of if you try something for a couple of weeks or months and it's not what you expect, you just go on to something. You're trying to say you got to commit to it. But
And you have committed to it, right? You've committed to it. We've committed a lot of financial resources to it, you know, right? We've moved you in. There's been a lot that's gone into this. So let's do what we can to make it work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you get any kind of refund if you bail?
Yeah, there's a drop dead date. So but it's usually right around now. It's usually about 5 or 6 weeks in.
So they do give kids
they do.
Some time.
They do. Yeah. Most every school I've ever come across is willing to do
and
that.
And you won't get all your money back.
But it's significant. Yeah.
Dr. John Duffy is our guest. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200 is the way to go. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Clinical psychologist Dr. John Duffy is with us. You can go to drjohnduffy.com. Also read his book, The Available Parent. So you've done your therapy with people. You've written a book. You do a podcast. And now you're going to branch off into television.
Well,
what's going on?
Sort of. I was lucky enough to be contacted by a guy named Daryl Roberts, who is producing this film for Lifetime TV about teenage anxiety.
And his background, just to spruce this up a little bit, is very, very impressive. He's involved with This Is Us.
The executive producer of this project, his name is Shukri Tilghman.
Shukri Tilghman.
I practiced that all morning. Yes. I still think I got it wrong.
All right.
Is a executive producer and writer for This Is Us.
Oh, yeah.
And is executive producing this project as well. Yeah.
Wow.
So what is this exactly?
So the way this is going to work, the idea it's predicated on is that storytelling is a great way to manage teen anxiety. If you hear somebody else's story, you're probably going to relate to it. So teenagers are encouraged between now and October 5th to submit their story of their own anxiety. And this can be a narrative that they write. This can be something that's spoken, like a YouTube video. It can be a song, a rap. It can be a poem. It can be
a comic book.
A comic book. Yeah, great idea.
A cave drawing.
Cave drawing, yeah. Interpretive dance.
They didn't have anxiety back in the cave days.
We might be opening up the ideas a little
too
broad.
Many. But now there's
right.
too many. All right.
The idea being, we're going to, there's a panel of experts I'm lucky enough to be included on. We're going to select one of these stories that feels representative of teen anxiety as a whole.
Yeah.
And they are going to make a full Lifetime film.
Whoa.
As a result of this thing.
That's outstanding.
Yeah, so it'll be a play
That's
on
very
Lifetime
nice.
And at colleges and high schools and mental health
And because
centers.
It's Lifetime, you know that Meredith Baxter Burney might be in it.
We're already making
Addicted
calls.
Addicted to something.
Unfortunately. Wendy, I know you're kidding, but it's sad but true.
You know, it's come full circle because in the first segment you mentioned a lot of times there's a stigma of a kid reaching out, being seen walking into the counselor building in college. We have to erase that stigma. And I think with these movies coming out and these ideas coming out, don't people who suffer from things just want to know they're not the only ones?
It's a huge component of alleviating the symptoms is knowing like, okay, well, there's a name for this and a lot of people suffer from it. Anxiety is way up there.
And how do people find out more about this information if they want to submit something?
So if you go to bemebefree.org, you will find all the information you need to sign up for this thing.
With what's going on with Brett Kavanaugh right now, what is the lesson that parents can teach their kids? There's got to be something we can get out of this as a parent watching this with or around our kids.
Absolutely. Right? I read this piece in The Atlantic this morning, Bill, that kind of supports what I've seen clinically. Kids are interested in this story, and they have a lot to say about it. Teenagers, boys and girls, are saying, well, you guys should probably be talking to us because you're talking about a time in his life that matches this time in our lives. And a lot of the boys are saying, this isn't a boys will be boys thing. We would never do anything like this. So, you know, and we recognize developmentally we might be taking more risks, but we're not going to take this kind of risk. We're not going to put some girl at risk. We would never do that. A lot of the girls are saying, is this what I'm doomed to? You know, like, is this going to happen to me just because this is what's expected of boys? You know, so I think it's really important to talk to, especially your teenage kids, but even younger, about like what this means, what the implications are for them, and elicit their thinking. They have a lot to say about it.
I have hope in the future. I know because the children are our future. What's that song?
Yeah.
Well, here's why I have hope. These things are coming out. Kavanaugh graduated from high school, I believe, 1983.
Yeah.
Things were different then, and the way people treated girls, and it was a whole different time. Now I feel like these kids have more respect for one another, and gender doesn't matter that much. So I feel like as our kids get to be Brett Kavanaugh's age, we're going to be okay.
I have so much hope in that regard, Wendy. You know, I was working with a boy yesterday who had pulled up a lot of bits from Kavanaugh's yearbook, and he said he's not the only guy who's saying kind of this this stuff about women and this stuff about drinking. And he said we'll never do that. We're not, you know, our generation is different than that. We're not going to be you know, disrespectful toward anybody. And so I have so much hope that this generation is the one that changes it. But to your point, a generation ago, what's in there is oddly ordinary, I think.
I told the story the other day. Over the weekend, there was a woman on the news, and they were talking about the Brett Kavanaugh situation. And she said, come on, what guy hasn't been in that position and done that sort of thing? And I went, oh, I hope a lot.
Yeah,
I know I haven't.
Too. Right.
So,
right. I agree with you. You know, I think that is really, really dangerous, slippery slope thinking.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that, you know, and we're in roughly that age group that he's in.
Right.
And I think we can both say with relative clarity, I never did anything like that. And most of my friends never did anything like that.
Right.
You know, I think this is not altogether an anomaly, but I don't think we can say it's like kind of this sweeping thing that covered every male of that generation either.
Yep.
And that's a time, I'm not defending Brett Kavanaugh at all, but that's a time when a guy is figuring out what to do when he's with a woman, a girl at that point. And just thinking back in high school, there was never any force, there was never any put your hand over your mouth, but it's right. awkward. And you know what? Sometimes guys were pushy back then, but right. there's a difference between being pushy and what he allegedly did.
Yeah, I certainly, you know, that the hand over the mouth and then the way that was described crosses several
yes.
lines, right? You know, and I think anybody would agree to that. And I think the idea, I watched his interview with his wife the other night, and the idea that, you know, no, nothing happened. I was, you know, absolutely a choir boy.
Yeah.
Where the yearbook itself suggests, like, oh, I was president of this keg club.
Right,
right.
Yeah, I think you have to at least be honest about, like, what did happen.
Well,
you know?
The honesty is the most important thing, because we all, as parents, try to teach our kids, you have to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Well, somebody here is not telling the truth.
Right.
Maybe it's him, maybe it's her, maybe it's a version of both of them, but somebody's not being honest.
And I think it's important to talk to our kids about that, because
yeah.
you know, if we're looking to raise people with integrity,
yeah.
I think we have to at least address this issue with them, no matter where we stand politically, you know, no matter what we think ought to happen here.
Yeah.
It's important to talk about integrity, especially in a situation like this.
And remember, at first, Kavanaugh was saying, yeah, I was respectful of women. I went to church every Sunday. And now he is saying, you know, he actually drank beer, usually on weekends. Sometimes I had too many. In retrospect, I said and did things in high school that make me cringe now. That's a different story than we heard originally.
Again, you be honest.
I can forgive someone who's honest. I can't forgive a liar.
I would agree, and I don't know that many of us can say we didn't have cringeworthy moments in high school. That's different, right? You know, and I think it's important to be honest at least about that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So true.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. John Duffy. Again, if you suffer from anxiety, if you're listening and your kid, what's the age group for this?
About 12 to 22.
All right. You can submit a video, a poem, what else?
A rap, a song, or just a narrative, whatever you like.
To be featured in a Lifetime movie eventually. And what is the website to submit this stuff?
BeMeBeFree.org.
Perfect.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. A quick break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I just love it when we have Grammy Award winners in the studio. And Bill, that'll never happen to you.
No.
I'm sorry.
It might.
Well, oh, you're very kind.
Jake Arrieta's song, of course, is deserving.
And I'm working on more. I'm working on my own white album, Jim.
You are?
Yes.
Is it going to be Off-White?
I took one of your albums and I just put white out all over it, and that's my white album.
That's a good gimmick. I
yeah,
like
it
that.
Is a good yeah. gimmick. That's Jim Peterik, everybody.
Hey, of course it is.
Oh, boy. Nice to see you.
So glad to be here. Look at that view. Oh, my God.
Isn't that insane?
It's insane.
Yep. For Navy people who have never been up here, you get to see Lake Michigan and Navy Pier right from where
Navy
we are.
Navy Pier is so awesome.
Yep. It's our Allstate Skyline studio, and it's pretty darn good.
We like it.
Darn good. Great to be here, Wendy and Bill. Karen is listening back home.
Hi, Karen.
At her radio, and all my friends are. I put it on Facebook yesterday, so you got a big audience,
good.
Man.
Like
well, that's because
that.
You're in.
No. It's because you guys are in.
Before we get into the music, you I'm holding in my hand something with your name on it.
Not for air.
Explain. Jasmine, could you call my attorney really quickly, please? Call my lawyer. Explain what this is, because this is, well, how exciting this must
this
be for
This is exciting.
You.
This is my Eye of the Tiger protein bar, 25 grams of protein, low sugar, 6 grams of sugar. It's got turmeric for recovery. It's got guara for caffeine. It's a meal in itself, man.
You have your
it's
own
rocking.
Sports bar.
It's my own sports bar. It's the Jimmy Bar Company, which is a great company.
Yeah.
It's not me, Jimmy. It's a Jimmy Simon, Jim Simon. And we got together and we did tastings for about 3 months to come up with the magic bar.
Yeah.
You know, now it's going to be in all the Walmarts coast to coast.
Oh.
Yeah, excellent. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's the Eye of the Tiger bar. That's
why don't you use tiger milk in it? Is that more expensive?
That's not a bad idea.
You should consider that.
Okay, thanks.
But how cool. Now, why isn't your picture should be on this?
It's on the box.
Oh, is it on the box?
If you buy a box of them. But it's got my little quote on the back and stuff like that. And
where? Yeah. Where's your quote?
It's underneath the little flap, I think.
Would you call this? Would you say that this is a good vehicle for energy? Is that fair to?
That would work.
No, okay. No,
your quote contains milk, peanut, and soy.
Yeah, it's clever, isn't it? It's kind of poetical. You got to read lower as the co-writer of Eye of the Tiger. Blah, blah, blah,
oh yeah.
Blah, blah. Okay, never mind.
All right. Well, I can't wait to try this. Eye of the Tiger. Perform. Recover. Repeat.
I'd just march right into a Walmart and get yourself some of these bars. I'm helping
you
him with
can
the marketing.
Write all my,
I'm helping Jim with the marketing.
You can do my marketing.
This is excellent.
Bill.
Congratulations.
I had to march right into Walmart.
Yes.
I
get
love
yourself
that.
A pack.
Hear that, Jimmy?
Yep.
Jim Simon. They're all listening, all my cohorts over there. Anyway.
What's the big show you have coming up?
That is the big shoe. That is, as Ed Sullivan said, the big, really big shoe. Everybody can do an Ed Sullivan. Let's hear you.
Really big shoe.
Just as bad as
ladies
mine.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
How about you?
I have a small shoe.
Okay, that's much better. Okay.
I think that was more Felicia Middlebrooks.
I don't know who that is. It's Jim Peterkin World Stage. We're doing it at the Moraine Valley College.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful auditorium. We haven't played there in a little while. This is our 25th anniversary of being a wonderful college.
Mm-hmm.
Karen actually went to Spanish class there. She just ended a 14-week class.
Oh, really?
To learn Spanish, and she loved it. But I digress. The show is going to be not in Spanish at all, although we love the Mexican people. And yeah. I'm not saying we don't. We do. But there's no Mexicans on the bill that I know of. Ides of March, of course. What show would be complete?
You got to have Ides of March.
We have to.
Special guests?
Ides of March. Oh, besides that,
yeah.
Jim Peterick will be there. Oh, more. Danny Serafin of Chicago, the iconic drummer of the original guy in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
who did those amazing tracks on Make Me Smile, Saturday in the Park, I'm a Man. He is there leading the parade, along with Bill Champlin, who was with Chicago only for 30 years, and sang, Heart Habit to Break and Look Away. Bill is amazing. He also wrote After the Love Is Gone for Earth, Wind, and Fire, Turn Your Love Away for A Love Around for Al Jarreau. All these songs will bring back so many memories. It's like getting the whole gang back together again. Mark Farner. How cool is he?
Love him.
I mean, he's the original hippie, and he dances like a teenager up there, and he plays his butt off and sings.
Yeah.
Grand Funk Railroad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, by the way, yes.
Yes.
The former original lead singer, some kind of wonderful rock and roll soul, and of course...
Wait, before you announce who is next, Bill, you're going to be very excited.
I can't wait to find out. Who is it?
Mike Reno.
Yep.
From Loverboy.
Everybody's working for the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's right.
It's true.
And he doesn't have a sports bar.
He may have one
sometime.
But I did want to say one more thing about Mark Farner, and that's we end with, I'm getting closer to my home. And everybody's singing along and bonding and becoming hippies again.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
When I worked in rock radio, that song had the longest fade out.
Yeah.
You could go to the bathroom, get a cup of coffee, and come back, and it would still be.
I'll tell Mark, you went to the bathroom on the fade.
To his music.
Oh, that's great.
He's a great guy, a wonderful showman as well. Of course, Colin Peterick, my amazing son.
He's amazing.
He'll be singing a lot of the Chicago hits along with Riley Patrone, another one of our background singers and a great singer in his own right. Yvonne Gage, our soulful gal. She's going to be doing that duet on Almost Paradise.
Oh, nice.
I'm knocking on heaven's door. She sounds much better with Mike Reno than me just caterwauling right here. But it's going to be an amazing show.
All this on one show, Jim.
On one show in the World Stage Band, the Ides of March Horn Section, Eddie Breckenfeld on drums, Clem Hayes on bass, Christian Cullen on keyboards, Michael Queen on... Amazing.
A lot of people.
And here's the thing. You can go see the show, the 25th anniversary of the Fine Arts and Performing Arts Center at Moraine Valley. All proceeds going to Moraine Valley Foundation. You can go see the show, but there's also dinner and a show as well.
That's right. You can get a wonderful dinner there. I think the Ides of March will partake in that. But what a package, you know, and you don't have to go to dinner. You could just have an Eye of the Tiger bar and
that's
see
enough
the show.
You need. That's all you
might
need.
Might be. Yeah.
Are you going to bring some of those Eye of the Tiger
We're
bars?
We're going to be tossing them out, and people are going to be fighting for them on the floor. It's going to be
Who
awesome.
Wants a pick when they can have an Eye of the Tiger bar?
Much
yeah,
better tasting.
We'll do both.
Yeah? Oh, wow.
So we'll be at the merch table, you know, signing stuff, and we always do that. We hang out, and all the members of World Stage will be there. So if you want to meet these people,
yeah,
it's a great opportunity.
It can happen that way. We know you're shy. You don't like to do this, but
shy.
Can we come back and maybe you do a song or something? Maybe, possibly.
I'll talk to my agent.
See what he says.
Okay.
Can I
All
just
right.
give a website, though, if you'd like to go see this? It's moraine valley.edu/FPAC, Fine Performing Arts Center. That's what that stands for. moraine valley.edu/, I don't know. I'm just saying /FPAC. Quick break, and then you will come out of your shell and sing
us
some tunes.
I will try.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. You're eating your Eye of the Tiger bar, Bill.
I'm enjoying it immensely.
I love it.
I don't know what's in it that gives it, there's like an extra dimension to it I'm not accustomed to.
I think it's the guara.
Is it the guara?
It's the guara. Natural caffeine.
Oh, I love
guarana.
The guarana.
That's what you're is trying
that what
to say.
Yes, say that again.
Maybe it's that.
Guarana.
Guarana.
That's
ah, that's
what it is.
I'm sorry.
That's what
guara,
it is.
I have to
I don't
learn
know.
That.
Yes.
As the spokesperson.
Has a kid ever come to your door at Halloween time dressed as you for Halloween?
You know, that happened once.
Yeah, what was that like?
A girl with purple hair. She said, I'm just like you.
Oh, wow.
And it was very, very cute.
What a nice tribute.
Yeah, I'm telling
Did you
yeah.
always like purple?
Always. It's a cool color.
It is cool.
And I've had this for 10 years, and I want to become purple. I'm thinking it's like, you know, if you wear purple enough, my sideburns will go purple, everything will go
right.
purple. Hasn't happened yet.
Right.
Remember your parents used to tell you, if you eat that, you'll turn into it.
Yeah.
You should start eating more eggplants.
That, you think eggplant or grapes, you never
yeah.
go wine.
Oh, yeah.
It was you and Prince were the guys who were like the spokespeople
of
purple. Oh, yeah,
my bro Prince, yeah. Yeah, and I love Prince, but that didn't influence me. I just liked the color.
Yeah. It works for you.
I had a purple crushed velvet coat when I was in fifth grade. I should have saved it for you.
Oh, man, I would have worn it, man. You know me.
It probably would have fit you, too, if you want to know the truth.
I don't know.
Can you do
about.
A song? You have the guitar. It's ridiculous. Can you just do a song?
I brought my harp to the party, but nobody asked me to play.
Oh,
thank you.
I'm asking.
Thank you. Well, how about a new song?
All right,
Is that something different for us here? We're going to be performing this with the Ides of March at Moraine Valley College on the 6th of October. See you there. I was in China about 3 years ago, and I played a huge festival for 80,000 people, and I'm doing Eye of the Tiger, I'm doing Vehicle, Searches Over, and they're all singing along.
Oh, nice.
You know, it was a major life-changing thing for me, but what a great culture, what a great audience.
You made Red China, Purple China.
I did. You should do radio, really, I'm telling you. That's good. I didn't know what to say. That was so clever.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wrote this song in China because I felt so many millions of miles away from Chicago. I missed home, but I really loved the new culture that I was learning about. But I felt I was too far to turn around.
Oh.
Here we go. My reflection in the window is someone who I'm just about to meet. I've seen the miles I've left behind, the clouds of dust I've stirred up on the street. Don't wanna waste another moment. Wake up and wonder where the time went. Can't take the easy out, the braver out is calling out my name. I'm on the road to where I've never been, beyond the borders of imagining. This story is my life, I own the movie rights. This passport is my fate, the shoes I wear tonight. I am wide awake, but I am dreaming. Stumbling as my first step hits the ground, but I've come too far to turn around. Gotta take it all the way now. It's tempting to
fall back upon the cushions that I laid beneath your head. But where's the courage of the future when you're laying there in bed? I can no longer cheat my passion. It's time to put my plan in action. I'm on the road to where I've never been. Beyond the borders of imagining. This story is my life. I own the movie rights. This passport is my fate. The shoes I wear tonight. I am wide awake, but I am dreaming. I don't know who I am or where I'm bound. But I've come too far to turn around. Gotta take it all the way now. I'm on the road to where I've never been.
That is beautiful.
That's so good.
You know what? It was jangly.
It was jangly.
Yeah.
I loved that.
Thank you. It's a little bit folk rocky, you know, and of course with the eyes and then my 12-string guitar, it's going to be
That's so beautiful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very, very nice.
That's going to be on our new record.
What's it called, the new record?
Play On.
Play On.
Available yet or not yet?
Nope. We're starting to
still
cut it in November.
It?
It'll be out in, like, you know, March, April, May.
Excellent.
Next year.
What's the biggest misconception? Those of us who are not rock stars, who is everybody in the room except you, what's our biggest misconception about rock stars?
That we have great food in the green room.
Oh, really?
Oh,
the
man.
Food's not good?
It's not good, man.
Oh.
It's like Spinal Tap, you know. You fold the bread and it breaks.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh.
But some places treat you right and some places don't.
It's inconsistent, though.
But
huh?
But Ron Onesti, I got to give him a plug over
I love
at the
Ron,
Arcata.
Arcata Theater.
I mean, he'll do prime rib before the show,
oh,
man.
Nice.
I mean, the guy is off the chain.
Yeah,
love
good.
Him. But the other thing is, you know, we did not live the rock and roll lifestyle. I mean, we were number one with Vehicle, partying with Led Zeppelin, but not drinking, not doing the girl thing, not just because the music was too important.
Oh.
And that's probably why I'm still here rocking.
That's it, right?
That's true.
That's the key.
We love it.
JimPeterick.com. You're on Facebook. You're on Twitter, Instagram. You're all over the place. Jim Peterick's World Stage at Moraine Valley Community College. It's happening Saturday, October 6th, 7:30 show. If you want to just see the show, that's cool. If you want to sit down and do dinner and then the show, you can get tickets at moraineValley.edu/FPAC. Do we have a quick one more?
Hey, well, I'm the friend of the stranger in the black sedan. Won't you hop inside my car? I got pictures, got candy, I'm a local man. Take you to the nearest stop. I'm your vehicle, baby. I take you anywhere you want to go. I'm your vehicle, and I'm your vehicle woman on the Bill and Wendy show. That's what I wanted to get in.
That was good.
I love you.
Love
I need you. I want you, got to have your child. And I love you.
Love you.
Need you.
Need you.
Want you, got to have your child. But I love you.
Love you.
Need you.
Need you.
Want you, got to have your child. Great God in heaven, you know I love you. One, two.
That could be a hit.
No, come on.
Jim, that could be a hit.
Well,
don't argue.
You know what
you
I
know
love? Can
Thank
we
you.
Get one more real quick? It's like before I could finish, already
it was
starting.
Already being sung.
You're amazing.
That was so good, Jim.
I love you so much.
I love you guys. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
That's
and
Jim
if you
Peterick.
Want to see the show,
yeah?
Let me know, baby.
Yep, it's just that simple.
It
Go
is.
See Jim Peterick.
October
you need
6th.
To see him. October
Moraine Valley.
The 6th
Thanks for
Moraine
having
Valley.
Me, guys.
Thanks, Jim. We'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.